95.7 Ben FM Philadelphia presents Her Story, hosted by Kathy Romano. Her Story is a weekly tribute to women making a major difference in the lives of others by telling her story.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
95.7 Ben FM presents Her Story with Kathy Romano.
Good morning and welcome to Her Story. Today, we're going to talk about addiction. Drug and alcohol addiction can destroy lives. We all know that. More specifically, the opioid epidemic is destroying lives and our communities. We all know someone who suffers from some sort of addiction, or maybe it's you who suffers from the addiction. One of the largest, most innovative addiction treatment centers in the world has a number of locations in our area. It's Recovery Centers of America. They treat patients ages 18 to 80 years old. Opioid overdose is at an all-time high in our country, with 115 people dying each day. Sometimes people don't know what to look for when they're searching for a treatment program. Well, here today to talk about Recovery Centers of America is the clinical director and director of outpatient services, Dawn Bellamarch, and Dr. Denny Carice, a clinical psychologist and chief scientific officer at Recovery Centers of America. Ladies, welcome to Her Story.
Thank you.
Each of you, tell me about your responsibilities at RCA.
So my responsibilities as chief scientific officer is company-wide, so all of our sites, and to identify the best practices out there, what works the best, and make sure that we deliver evidence-based practices and that we do it in a way that patients can embrace it and go on and live their life in recovery.
As the clinical director, I oversee our inpatient site at Lighthouse, which is in Mays Landing, New Jersey. It's currently 53 beds, expanding to over 130 within the next 6 months. And then I also get to see our New Jersey outpatient site, so our full continuum of care. So all of our patients that are able to smoothly transition from inpatient to outpatient, I get to oversee that process.
And that was my next question, because whenever I hear outpatient, I immediately think, well, does that actually work? You want somebody to go inpatient. At least that's what I've thought my entire life. So when I hear outpatient, I'm like, well, do they have to go through the process of inpatient to outpatient? Do they transition?
So on our end, we want our patients to get 90 days of continuous treatment in a full continuum of care. So yes, obviously, you know, you will hear evidence stating that the longer you stay in treatment and the more treatment you get through a full continuum of care, the better your outcomes will be for long-term recovery. So if, you know, inpatient treatment is what our patients come in for, we of course want to see them go through the full continuum of care, because then they're getting the skills and the tools that they need to be successful for the long-term.
Do you know any statistics for Recovery Centers of America for people leaving who are staying sober?
I think as a company, we're working to get more of a process in place to track our outpatient statistics. We're a little newer into the outpatient realm, so it's something we're starting to build. But essentially, it is something we're starting to track as we move forward.
So it's interesting, nationally, and my perspective sometimes is as a national NIH researcher, which is what I did for about 17 years. So nationally, about 50% of people who make an appointment for outpatient care never show up, and about 50% never show up a second time. So the idea that we could have an outpatient center that's either in or close to where they went to residential, where they can start to form these bonds with people in residential care and then see them in outpatient care. I've even designed the interior of the outpatient to really look like the residential center so that you feel very comfortable when you go in and when you come back is incredibly important.
And I read, Dawn, that you deal with gambling addiction as well.
So I am a certified compulsive gambling counselor. I live in Atlantic City, New Jersey. So, you know, I see a lot of clients.
That makes sense. I didn't know you lived in Atlantic City.
Yes, okay. I do. And I actually got the certification a couple years back, you know, seeing the gambling and seeing Atlantic City's growth, but also getting patients referred to me in private practice that were really struggling. And now it is something that we can incorporate into our inpatient and outpatient practices. And I think ask a lot more assessment questions that help us to manage that while they're in treatment with us.
So is somebody with a gambling addiction doing the same type of treatment as somebody with a drug addiction?
We are addressing the substance use primary, obviously, in our residential and our outpatient, but our patients come in to get a full treatment workup, I call it. So essentially everything that they're presenting with is what we're working on during the course of their treatment. So yes, when I say it's the same, it's really just meeting their needs and meeting them where they're at the time. Obviously, the substance use being the primary reason they came in, but we treat the whole person.
Dr. Carice, do you deal with people with a gambling addiction?
Not so much myself. Our treatment centers kind of vary sometimes in what they specialize in. Everybody is primary substance use disorder. That's what our licenses are. And at some sites, we have people who specialize in trauma. In fact, every site has at least one person who specializes in trauma. We have people who specialize in gambling. We have eating disorder specialists now as well. So what we want to do is that when the person comes in, you can't just treat these things in a vacuum. You can't treat one, then the other. You have to do it all concurrently. And that's what we strive to do.
If someone wants help with their addiction but doesn't know where to turn, what advice would you give them?
Well, first I'd say call 1-800-RECOVERY. It's a very easy number to remember.
And if you guys are open 7 days a week.
Yes. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. In fact, one of the things that makes us really different is that not only do we answer the phone within 10 seconds 24/7, we also actually take admissions at our sites 24/7. So we don't have like a 9-to-5 admission rate. A lot of people don't know what to look for when they're looking for treatment. It's really important now, especially since this field has grown so much, to really know what to look for. Some things that I would put in that kind of a top five category is, again, do they offer a continuum of care? Detox, residential, outpatient. And people can start in that continuum wherever their acuity level is. The place should offer all of those. Another one is that all the research shows that when the family's involved, the person has a much higher likelihood of staying, continuing, and doing well. Are family services a priority? Do you have family therapists? A couple others would be, are they in network? Probably all heard these or seen these news reports about people that get out of rehab and they owe $30,000 in drug screen bills. That happens when a place is primarily out of network and they bill separately for every little thing. We're in network. 95% of our patients are in network, which leaves them with really a minimal either copay or deductible. So those are some of the top things. And then if I look at women's issues in particular, I would check and see if the place has separate units or separate groups for women versus men, because some women, and Dawn can probably speak more to this, really thrive when it's a women's only.
Absolutely. So we have gender-specific programming at all of our facilities. We're working to build out age-specific programming at everyone as well. But the idea being that females in a primary group, which is a small group of up to 8 patients, can openly share with members of their own gender, feel safe, feel comfortable in sharing, and know that it's an environment that's conducive to meet their needs. I think another thing we're doing really well is the trauma track and the trauma-specific programming that Denny touched on has been really important. And we now have a trauma track specifically built at Lighthouse, and I know at Devon as well. A lot of our females specifically coming in are able to do a 4-week curriculum where they're able to address some of the underlying trauma that may have led to substance use.
Are there facilities that have both men and women mixed?
Yes.
Yes, there yes. absolutely are.
Not at Recovery Centers of America.
Well, it depends. When we open a new facility, it might open with 30 beds, and it's tough to have separate wings and separate nursing stations. But as soon as we get to a size where we can, they're actually in whole separate units, and they have lunch and dinner with just their same gender. A lot of folks in their addiction, a lot of women, there's a real sexual component. There's a lot of women, regardless of their background, do eventually end up trading sex for drugs, or they kind of learn and are taught that they're not of value, and we really want them to really focus. And they also learn that sex is a way to get what you want, and we don't want them acting in that way at the treatment program.
Sure, of course. And also another thing that I found interesting, you guys will actually provide a car service.
We transport within 20 miles, 30 minutes for our outpatient programs as well. So the black car service transitions through our continuum of care for all patients involved in our programming.
And we've picked up patients as far away as New York and even Florida. What we want to do is make treatment, really high quality treatment, available and affordable to anybody who wants it.
The opioid epidemic has basically taken over our country. I mean, it is such a problem. Are you treating those addicted to opioids differently than you did in the past with other drug addictions?
Well, one thing I will say is that opioid addictions are one of the addictions that there are really valuable medications that help treat it. If your loved one has an opioid addiction, or whether that's heroin or prescription opioids, doesn't matter. It's the exact same thing to your body. You want to make sure that there are medication options available. There are medications that will keep you on a steady dose, but there are also medications that have been shown scientifically to decrease craving for the drug. So those are medications, for example, that don't work with cocaine. So that would be the difference.
And I think it's definitely a younger population we're seeing, 18 to 34 age group, and not just specific to that age group, but we are seeing a younger population coming in with the opioid epidemic. I think that's where the age-specific programming comes in. And really, like Denny pointed out, a typical abstinence-based program of late is what we're focused on, but also we might be setting them up with some type of medication maintenance on the outside because they haven't been able to have a lot of long-term success doing it completely abstinent.
There are so many people right here in your community that are suffering from this and moving from prescription drugs to heroin. And it's not your typical drug addict. It's stay-at-home moms. It's professionals. It's your husband, your wife, your son, your daughter. It's happening to all of these people. For the community and for families, it's so difficult. A lot of times what happens is the family member will then withdraw themselves if it gets to a point where it's too much for them. So what do you say to the family?
So if the family member of their loved one who comes into treatment?
Yeah, when they've come to the point where they're trying to help and it's just been so many times and they can't help, what do you say to the family who just can't take it anymore?
I think the education and orientation we provide really gives a baseline understanding to families of how strong the disease really is. Because I think that there's a misconception that the patient or the loved one coming in can control it. And even though we're helping them get back on the straight and narrow and kind of have a life in recovery, the families really get the education and they also get the therapy with the family therapist where they can start to rebuild. Their lives may not look exactly the same way as before, but how they can rebuild together. I think typically we do a great job with family programming at Recovery Centers of America is that the family was isolated and it's the patient's problem to figure out. And now we really bring all the supports in so that the patient knows when they get back out there, not only they have positive support, but the people around them understand the disease and the struggles that they went through. So it's really just incorporating everyone into the process.
Again, the studies show that when families involved, you're much more likely to stay in treatment. But there's a big myth, I think, that you have to hit bottom, that you have to be ready for care. And there's some major scientific studies that have shown that people who are coerced into treatment, and usually that's either by a criminal justice system like a drug court, or the other group is doctors, nurses, pilots that are forced into treatment, or the third group I'll call is the mommy mandate. They're mandated by their family. People who are coerced into treatment do just as well as people who come in of their own free accord. And that's because that's our job. Our job is to transition that into an internal motivation. Right. They see people around them all the time that once had a problem, no longer do, and are living really fun, joyous lives. So I would tell any family member, please don't step back so much totally and wait for them to hit bottom. Right. Just always be there. You cannot fix them. That's absolutely true. You didn't cause it. You can't cure it. But somebody's bottom might be losing a job. Somebody else's bottom might be prostituting. You just don't know. And then the other piece is that some families think, well, he's had 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 treatments. Right. It's never going to work. The reality is that the more treatments somebody has had, the more likely the next one works.
The patients, do they have to agree to come in?
So yes, it is voluntary that they come in. But like Denny pointed out, there's a lot of motivations for why people come into treatment, whether it's employment, mommy made me do it, they don't have a home to go back to. But I think what Denny pointed out is really our job once they get to the facility is to kind of help encourage that surrender. Right. So like they may be coming in because there's something in their life. It's voluntary. They come in willingly. They're going to be there. They give us consent to treat. But essentially, our job is to really encourage them not to essentially have a bottom, but to surrender to a new way. Their way is not working and that's fine. But we're going to help you kind of rebuild a new way of doing things.
Dr. Carice, you've made significant advances in the quality of substance abuse treatment. Tell me about some of those studies.
Well, I have a long history as an NIH-funded researcher, and what I focused on was what's called health services research. So I did a lot of either national studies or studies where I would get anywhere from 20 treatment programs to my largest was 300 treatment programs, finding new and different things. One of the great ones, and sometimes research just kind of tells you what you knew intuitively, but one of the great ones was that we realized that in substance abuse treatment, there's a real difficulty getting ancillary services. Like somebody comes in and they need everything. And it's really tough for the counselors. They might need housing. They might need birth control. They might need a regular doctor. They likely need a dentist. So we put together this resource guide, starting with United Way's First Call for Help. And we put together an electronic resource guide that if somebody had a problem in employment, medical, family, drug, alcohol, psychiatric, that they could just go in and look through thousands of resources. And then we got 20 treatment programs to agree to do it, and half got it and half didn't. And lo and behold, the half that got this resource guide and an extra 2 hours of training, their patients got more services, services that are more targeted. They were more likely to stay and finish treatment mm-hmm. and more likely to be in recovery and to be sober down the road. So I did a lot of little studies like that, developing what's called evidence-based practices.
And you offered treatment internationally too, correct?
Well, I had a long history working with the UN, and so I helped start treatment systems in countries that never had treatment before. And this is early 2000s. A lot of these countries, they had no treatment because the government said, we have no problem in Egypt, in Nigeria, in Thailand. And since the government said they have no problem, they can't possibly have treatment, right? What got those countries to turn around and say, we need treatment, frankly, was the incidence of seroconversion to HIV as a result of needle sharing. That's really was the impetus for them to get treatment. So I was able to go into those countries and take all that we knew scientifically and develop treatment. And I never thought I'd have that chance in my own neighborhood. So when Brian O'Neill asked me to come and lead this company clinically, I was able to just start from scratch and build a treatment program that has all the components that I know have been shown to be effective.
And you're also a professor at the University of Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I'm an adjunct clinical professor.
And Dawn, you do some nonprofit work in the community in Atlantic City.
Yeah, so I am a co-founder of This Is AC, which is a nonprofit that we started up to really help spotlight the positive messaging behind Atlantic City. One of the great things that that's allowed me to do is my history is in nonprofit work. I spent like a decade at a local nonprofit, really doing a lot of the grant writing and a lot of the administrative work and bringing community-based programming to a lot of individuals and families. But one of the great things that the nonprofit work allows me to do is really to get into a lot of forums like this locally and spread the message about not just Lighthouse, but Recovery Centers of America and the work that we do. So it really comes full circle. And yeah, being out in the community is one of my favorite things.
You guys are both doing great work. And this is definitely something that's needed in our communities, in our lives. And it's great to have you both here. Now, before you go, I do have to ask you one last thing, Dr. Carice. You consulted on a movie and how actors should be portraying an addict or someone under the influence?
So it's incredibly important to me as somebody in this field, but also as somebody in my own personal long-term recovery for over 30 years, that both addiction and treatment and recovery are portrayed accurately at the level of press and TV. So I was fortunate to work with Martin Scorsese on his film, The Wolf of Wall Street, and I taught the actors how to act under the influence of Quaaludes and cocaine, and they did a phenomenal job.
So who did you work with? Which actors?
I worked with Jonah Hill and a number of other young actors. It was great. I have to say, Leonardo DiCaprio stood me up. I was getting ready to work with him, and they came back after 2 hours and said, oh, he already filmed that scene. So I was a little disappointed.
Oh, no.
So it was Jonah Hill and the rest of the actors.
I mean, that's pretty neat.
It's fun. You know, it's I've been doing this for over 30 years in this field, and I've been kind of nationally and internationally known. So you get all kinds of calls. Right now, I'm helping pro bono work on a script called Snow Babies, which is a Philadelphia-based company, Phillyborn Productions. And it's really an incredible movie. Just going to start to film soon. So I'm working on their script with them to make sure, again, that both addiction, drug use, treatment and recovery are portrayed in an accurate way.
Ladies, thank you so much for coming by.
Yes, my pleasure. Thanks for having us.
If you'd like to find out more information about Recovery Centers of America, you can call 1-800-RECOVERY or go to their website, 1-800-RECOVERY.com. Thanks so much for joining me today. I'm Kathy Romano. Have a great rest of your Sunday.
This has been Her Story with Kathy Romano. Her Story is produced by WBEN-FM in Philadelphia and airs weekly or on demand on your mobile device. Listen or subscribe at 957BenFM.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.